You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
Hurley and I are just going to have to fight about it one day.
I mean, I think there's so much infighting that they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground right now.
Any format where you can run Shadow of Doubt is a great format.
Maybe Wizards is going to kind of get out of this unscathed.
Keep your eyes on this space on MTGCast for Matt's new unaffiliated podcast, One Troll in a Brew.
And I lost taking first by 0.015 tiebreaker.
2-1, Hurley, you lose.
Which means Wizards would cost it at 4-3 black.
Hallelujah, I played Magic this week.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to a very special episode, 80s sitcom style, of TryHards. I can't believe we've actually made it this far. It is episode 50. We'll get started in the usual try-hard fashion before getting to some ground we've never covered before. So with that in mind, Matt, get us started. What are you drinking tonight?
Well, I'm drinking the same thing I was drinking last week. We went down to the Great Flood Brewery here locally, and I got another growler of the Find a Way IPA. It's quickly becoming one of my favorite local IPAs. For the price I'm paying, I can't argue with it either.
Brian, what are you drinking? You got some malt liquor left after episode 49?
My head still feels like I have malt liquor left, but I sure don't. No, I went back to the motherland and found Schlafly Brewery, the Black IPA, which I've brewed a couple of before. It's kind of an interesting thing to brew because you feel like you're brewing just kind of a malty, you know, fall ale, and then you got to add a ton of hops to it. This is a good one. I wouldn't say it's my favorite of all time. I actually think it's got a couple problems with it, but for a Tuesday night, perfect.
With Cinco de Mayo coming up this week after the show, I went with some Coronas this week. So I felt a little
choice.
Bit.
No, good choice. That's solid.
A little bit in the spirit.
I hate Mexican water.
And I didn't think that I would make it through the show if I went with my other idea, which was go to my favorite margarita making restaurant in town and like bring a pitcher home. So I thought that was probably not a good way to go for the show tonight.
Not a good idea.
Hopefully you've got something that is delicious as we get ready for episode 50 to unfurl. Guys, we have to start with welcoming a new patron on Patreon. A big TryHards welcome to Brandon Abbott. Brandon has decided to become part of the Heart of the Hards. That's the $10 a month pledge level. Brandon, thank you so much for reaching out and for supporting the show on Patreon. Brandon will be invited to our Google Hangout chat next month. We did that this past Sunday. Thanks to everybody who got involved in that. It was a lot of fun to do. And while certain things that we do extracurricular to the show will be available to different pledge levels on Patreon, the show itself will never be paywalled or restricted in any way. So if you enjoy TryHards, you'll get to keep enjoying TryHards wherever you're finding it right now. Brandon Abbott, so happy that you took the time and, let's be honest, maybe made a bad decision financially to support TryHards on Patreon. That brings us right up to what magic we played this week. I really just had an opportunity to sit next to Rachel as she did her first draft. The guys at the LGS said that was cool. It kind of expedited things by letting me answer rules questions for her. I didn't make any picks for her, just kind of answered some rules questions and kept the draft going. She was very happy to go 2-3 in her very first draft and got more compliments on her play as she developed throughout the evening. Matt, I know you want to tie your what you did in Magic this week into how you got better later in the cast, so we'll save that. Brian, what Magic did you play this week?
Hallelujah, I played Magic this week. Can we believe
know.
It?
I know, that's why Matt's going
to
wait.
I need to see photo evidence.
Yeah,
I know, I should. I should have guys from the shop, you know, chime in and tell you that I was actually there. No, I got down to the shop. I actually cracked open a box at like 4:30 last Friday night, which was actually a ton of fun. I was sitting next to some guys who had bought a couple boxes, and Renee, shout out to Renee, who cracked an entire case and then had an entire case of the bundles, you know, the old fat packs too. I was like, you're crazy. She's just nuts. Anyway, she pulled a lot of good stuff. Anyway, I drafted Amonkhet for the first time, had a really, really good time doing it. It was really tough for me to kind of do this just because I hadn't done the research as I was talking about doing. I was familiar with all the cards, but my pack one had both a foil Hapatra and a regular Hapatra. And I just felt like the gods were telling me something. I just had to kind of go with black-green. So I just decided at that point when I picked Hapatra that I was going to go Hapatra. And actually, the second Hapatra came around to me. So I was actually running two in my draft deck. Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Ran kind of a black-green discard, sort of cycling. Had a couple of the cartouche, had a couple of trials in the black-green. Bitterblade Warrior was a really good card for me in green. Bone Picker was amazing in black. That card was just nuts. Doom Dissenter was great because every time it hit the board, people would kind of look at it and be like, so if it dies, you just get a 2-2 zombie? And I'm like, yep. And I would kind of smile and be like, kill it, please, so I can replace this 1-1 that I have with a 2-2, please. Painful Lessons, I love that card. It's kind of got the pay two life to draw two cards kind of thing. So got run over anytime I played a blue-white Flyers deck, and I played that twice. So I ended up 2-2 in my draft. Just had a ton of fun, though. I liked what I drafted, how I built my deck. It was a lot of fun. Got to hit in with Hapatra and get a couple of Death Touch Snakes on the battlefield. And that just made the whole night go better. Got to kind of lean back and let the shoulders relax when you're like staring down a large creature on the other side that doesn't have flying and you got your Death Touch Snakes in front of you. So yeah, it was fun. Had a great, great time. Good to get out and crack some new packs.
Before we get into where we usually start, guys, with tournament news after a fresh weekend, we actually have to go back and consider some news that came out of Renton after the last cast before we can really understand what happened with the SCG Open in Atlanta this past weekend. Just as we were finishing post-producing episode 49, Wizards came out and in an addendum to the banned and restricted list last Monday, on Wednesday, they added the one card that many thought had to go from standard, Felidar Guardian. So we now no longer have the Felidar Saheeli combo in standard. No more Crazy Cat Lady instant wins. Brian, I'm going to start with you. Are you okay, not with just the banning, but with how Wizards handled the whole situation?
Yes, no. Am I fine with the banning? Absolutely. Do I care how Wizards handled it? I absolutely care how Wizards handle it. I was actually having a couple of beers the night that the announcement came out and thought, if you guys haven't read it, Brad Nelson wrote an amazing article, kind of almost stream of consciousness, as kind of like, hey, I had an article already ready going to press coming up on the Star City Games in Atlanta. And it was all about Saheeli combo and what you should sideboard and everything else. And then the announcement came out. And basically he said, I just went on tilt because is it the right thing to do? Yes. Could Wizards get their stuff together? Absolutely. And the whole article was basically about we're losing faith in Wizards because of how poorly they've managed themselves and their company and their announcements and other aspects of the game over the past 6 months to a year. That, you know, whenever they come out with an announcement, there's suddenly a big outcry from either the pros or from the community in general, and then they have to do a lot of backtracking. You know, it kind of doesn't put a whole lot of faith in the next decision they make when the same thing happens. And so as soon as Wizards kind of sets policy, I feel like, is this really what they think, or are they just kind of throwing it out there? And what I said in my comments on the Nelson article was, it's kind of like the let's throw it against the wall and see what sticks kind of mentality. And I'm never good with that. I thought that Aaron Forsythe's explanation as to why they didn't announce it at the original banned and restricted list announcement, that they wanted to see more data come in, was complete and utter bull. I think it was absolutely, they just missed it again, and it was a knee-jerk reaction, and they just quickly covered it up with their, oh, we wanted to see what was going to happen in Magic Online. If that was really what they were planning to do, you would have told the community about that a week before and then let that happen and then come back and said, see, we did listen to the community and here's what happened. So I don't know what you guys think about it, but I am slowly, well, quickly losing my faith in Wizards, but slowly kind of backtracking and just taking a hard look at every decision they make being very, very, very skeptical.
Matt, the overall thrust coming out of this announcement has been that while Magic is the greatest game ever created, we may have to open ourselves up to the possibility that Wizards is just inept when it comes to managing the greatest game ever created. Are we going too far as a community with that sense? I know you're the least cynical of the tryhards.
I can't even not laugh at that comment, Sean, because I am starting to believe that Wizards is one of the most political companies I have ever encountered. This reaction with Saheeli was somebody got outvoted. There was so much public outcry that they went and they said to whoever outvoted them, look what happened. We need to ban Felidar Guardian. And then they went out and banned Felidar Guardian. I mean, I think there's so much infighting that they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground right now. It's absolutely ridiculous. How a company could have such a great product and be so inept is beyond me. And beyond that, how they could be owned by Hasbro and not call on Hasbro to help them. Maybe with Greg Leeds in the lead now, maybe he's going to start doing that. I don't know. But it just, the whole situation boggles my mind. And why they would come out and say that obvious lie of, oh, we looked at data. You looked at data when nobody on Magic Online had any of the cards? Really? Are you shitting me right now?
But didn't they do that? Like, they said they released it early. It was the first time they'd released a set online before they released it in paper. So I know that they had some data, but it was only, what, 2 days?
It was 2 days of data, and you know nobody has the cards because...
Yeah, nobody's got Bruised already set.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I mean. It's just they're trying to force us to swallow a pill that's just not there. And to me, that was the most insulting thing.
I agree.
They even tried to eat crow like they did on the original announcement and said, hey, we're taking ownership of the Felidar Guardian. It should have never made it out the door. And Forsyth said that. Okay, fine. And hey, you know what? We're really sorry again, guys. And we messed up again. But we're still going to wait till after the Pro Tour. People are going to be like seething and be like, okay, I guess they really do know what they're doing because they're waiting till after the Pro Tour and 7 weeks. That's what we talked about all last week. They had a 7-week window to kind of see how it all plays out. And then 2 days later, I find that to be just reprehensible management.
If I pulled something like that at my work, I would have to come up with a detailed explanation that we would have to release to whatever customer I screwed over. And it would definitely be a CYA explanation. I would also have to come up with a plan to say how I'm going to prevent this from happening again. We'd have to share that. It's just absolutely insane that they wouldn't say, guys, we screwed up. We didn't ban it. Internally, here's what we're going to do in the future to make sure this doesn't happen again. That's all I'm going to say about it because it really gets me.
Well, I think Hurley's already challenging his record for most beep-outs in a cast from last time here early on this cast. But a follow-up question to both of you. We're all three now content creators when it comes to the love of our life as far as gaming goes with Magic the Gathering. Does WotC owe anything to content creators on this front? I'm not talking about monetary remuneration, but just to kind of have their game together. While WotC at the mothership does much of its own content creating, they know there is a vast secondary market that is going to react to something like a BNR announcement. Every podcast that was produced right around that time, ours included, came out with a disclaimer that it was recorded before the Felidar Guardian edition on Wednesday. The professor at Tulare Community College put together the next episode of their wonderful In Response program with Josh Lee Kwai, and they had to put a huge disclaimer on it that it was recorded after the BNR announcement, but before the addendum of Felidar Guardian. Brian, does Wizards owe its content creators, its non-in-house content creators who do this for the love of the game, literally anything when it comes to their organization and how they put things together on their front?
Oh, I think they absolutely do. And not just the content creators. I just think as a community as a whole, because the content creators are part of that community. I hate having to addendum anything, and I don't think people are really excited about addendums to this, because addendums is just like, oh yeah, we forgot, which shows a lack of planning, right? That's what an addendum is. I know that Star City Games, you get on there and you watch one of their Versus videos, And they record those well in advance of certain tournaments and certain dates. And they're talking about things like, oh, I'm guessing that Sahili probably had a pretty good weekend in Atlanta. And the comment section was just littered with, geez, didn't they know anything about this? And everybody else was on there like, no, actually they didn't, because it was recorded before, you know, the announcement and other things. So the real time aspect of this, I think, is very, very tricky. And for us to have to kind of qualify everything we say with, well, we're coming out on Wednesday. Who knows what Wizards might pop up with again? If Mardu Vehicles becomes like public enemy number one, which there's no reason to think it's not going to be, there better be some other decks keeping that in check. And if not, are they going to ban something else before 7 weeks is up? Because that deck is tuned so well right now that they don't want their standard to become another Sahili combo between now and the Pro Tour. So, yeah, I think it's a great question, Sean. It kind of hamstrings us in a way. If we never know what to believe in a timely fashion from Wizards, how are we supposed to produce the content with any sense of reliability and verifiability with what decisions they're making? You know, we're always going to be second guessing them, and I think that's the most disappointing thing.
Yeah, Matt, we'll get into the metagame from SCG Atlanta here in just a minute when we get to the tournament report. We obviously had to discuss the banning before we talked about the tournament, so we understand the field in the light that it was played in. But back to the question, what do you think WotC, if anything, owes to its secondary market content creators? Because so much angst has been created on this front, even though it did give rise to a lot of instant reaction shows, from the new video version of Sperling Sick of It all the way to Cyben Lore and so many other outlets.
In the strictest sense of the word, I don't think WotC owes on content creators anything. But they create the community that makes this game the best game. If I were WotC, I would be sending out Liz, I don't know how to say her last name, Lamfaro, I believe her last name is. She's the global marketing manager. Anybody who's ever had any marketing experience, I would be sending them out and having them do interviews, offering, open up the floodgates for access to these people to kind of talk everyone off a ledge. Now, obviously, they'd have to be controlled. They'd have to have very tight lips about what they can and cannot say, but you need to have a response other than just posting something on your website and saying, hey, look, we looked at a day and a half of data and we made a huge, huge change to what we've been, you know, doing for 7 weeks. I don't think that they don't recognize, but I think they need to look at the whole thing and say, okay, look, this is a huge time. This is a very vital time for us to fix what we screwed up. And just start blanketing the entire community, whether it be podcast or articles, you know, do interviews, do press releases, just blanket everything. Do what marketing is supposed to do.
Now that we've spent a good chunk of the show already on this, we're ready to understand what happened in Atlanta in the light of that late announcement from Wizards last week. Guys, I think that the dissatisfaction over the way the banned and restricted announcement was handled and then the addendum was reflected in really light attendance for SCG's Atlanta Open over the weekend. You've got a major metropolitan hub, a major airport hub, a major city on the East Coast, and yet the main event drew only 505 players. Andrew Jessup on Mardu Vehicles knocked off Ryan McDonough, also on Mardu Vehicles. We take a look at the top 16 from the new quote-unquote standard metagame, or maybe the new metagame. Mardu Vehicles had 7 of the top 16 and 5 of the top 8. The only other deck with 2 appearances in the top 16 was Tamer Aetherworks, Jeskai Control, Blue-Red Thermo Alchemist, Model Black Aggro, Black-Green Aggro, Black-Green Delirium, White-Red Humans, all had one entrant, as did the Black-White Zombies list that really has Matt's brewing juices going over the weekend. Matt, were you impressed with the innovation of the weekend, or were you stymied by the seeming accumulation of power that Mardu Vehicles has exhibited now that they no longer have to tie up all those sideboard spots for Sahili combo?
We're looking at two very different things here, and one of them is, I think, the attendance was so low because everyone expected it to be nothing but Mardu Vehicles and Saheeli, and they're like, well, that's going to be boring. But then there was four decks that could have won last round and got into the top eight that were not Mardu vehicles, but were beat by Mardu vehicles. You're essentially taking a knife to a gunfight there, only because you haven't had a chance to make figure out how to make that knife into a gun yet. I mean, maybe you're using a deck that's 50 or 60% tuned when the Mardu vehicles decks are 95% tuned. If you gave somebody, let's say, Stoneforge Mystic, and it was a brand new card, it's going to take somebody, even the best brewers, 2 or 3 weeks to figure out what the best build for that is, and they would probably still get beat by Mardu vehicles. Obviously, I'm speaking hyperbole a little bit there, but it's just, it all comes down to how tuned the decks are. And some people just wanted, you know, to play the tuned deck that they'd had. They didn't want to make a lot of changes. I think the only additional cards in those Mardu vehicles were cut to ribbons. So I think that's really why it won. But there's a lot of brewing space. I mean, it's been, I would say, several years since the format has been this wide open. And I think we're going to see a lot of cool stuff come out during the Pro Tour.
Brian, do you think Mardu Vehicles is going to necessitate a ban either before or after the Pro Tour, seeing as how its nightmare matchup was just banned, and now it gets to free up all those sideboard slots and a little bit of its main deck in order to combat a more open field rather than something that it knew it would be fighting round in and round out?
I really don't think there is going to be a ban, and I don't think it's necessary. I was actually very, very pleasantly surprised with all of the different decks that were making it into the top 16, top 32, and even top 64 of the SCG. And I would say that that's because of tuning, because Mardu Vehicles has been around for such a long time, and it's really, really, you know, a set deck, and people are very, very sure how to play it. A couple things. First of all, the blue-red, I was very, very happy to see how many copies of blue-red, either Thermo Alchemist or Control, were around. The Jeskai Control looks really, really good. The green-black energy deck looks really, really good. The green-red energy deck seems like it's still got legs there, you know, just kind of hit out of nowhere. So no, I'm, you know, as much as I was kind of bashing on this whole thing, I still think that there's so much space to brew. I still think that there are a lot of decks that can take on Mardu Vehicles. It's just going to have to take a little bit of time to unthrone the bully from the heart of Kirin, so to speak, and fatally push it over the side, as it were. So no, I don't think we're going to see a ban anytime soon. Boy, I really, really hope not. Because I think Mardu Vehicles is so set that it's probably going to have a little bit of a dive here as people come up with some new brews. Like you guys said, the zombie brew, the black-white zombies, things like that. So no, I'm very heartened by that. Maybe Wizards is going to kind of get out of this unscathed. I kind of hope they do, to be honest with you. I really don't want anybody to fail in this thing. I hope it didn't come across like that earlier. It's just a little troublesome to think that we have to go through all of this, you know, hand-wringing and, you know, grabbing our heads and saying, oh my God, what just happened, to get to a point where actually we say, hey, the metagame's pretty healthy.
Well, as Patrick Sullivan sits by still rolling his Tarmo die, let's dive into the Standard Classic. 79 players in the Standard Classic. Sam Lowe on Bant Aetherworks took down Christopher Mahaffey, who was on Mardu Vehicles. Not much there to see as far as the brewing, it seemed. It just seemed the field was less dominated by Mardu Vehicles, probably because those pilots were still involved in the open. On the Modern side of it, 209 players came out for the Modern Classic in Atlanta. Doug Lambert on Ad Nauseam knocked off Harry Knoll, who was on Scred Red. Matt, you love Modern. Is Scred Red growing legs and a little bit of resilience? Because this is a deck that has now made waves from Dallas to Atlanta, and it seems to have the metagame by the short hairs.
It's not that crazy. I mean, it's not an amazing deck. Any deck that is a really focused kind of direct damage deck is going to have a decent matchup against all these Death Shadows decks. So while I do like the Scred Red only because it's kind of ridiculous, you know, it's just like Modern. It's going to be just one of those decks that you have to kind of know how to play against and play against it.
Brian, is Modern slipping into the realm of Legacy in so much as it's always been said that in Legacy, you can play any deck as long as you know it inside and out and know your matchups inside and out?
Are we at that place with Modern? Yes, we acknowledge that there is a best deck, and it's probably Jundeath Shadow in Modern, but can you literally play anything as long as you know those matchups, as evidenced by the seeming rise of Scred Red over the last couple of tournaments?
You know, I still think we're in the spot with Modern that you can play almost anything. If you look a little bit deeper than just the SCG Classic with the Modern, but some of the qualifiers and things like that that have been happening, there's all kinds of decks littering the top. You know, Affinity is still there. We've got Burn, Elves is well representative, Eldrazi Tron, and then the Bant Eldrazi decks are still putting up good numbers. A control deck every now and then will crop up. Living End, you know, makes a weird appearance every now and then. Scape Shift is another one. I've often said this, and Hurley and I are just going to have to fight about it one day, that, you know, Modern is a healthy format. I think Modern is more akin to Legacy because of the variety of decks that you can play, as opposed to what Standard has become. I think, to your question, Sean, about knowing your matchups inside and out, that is a bigger part of Modern nowadays than it has been, just because of how established Modern has become. It's really hard now to kind of just sleeve up a Modern deck and show up at a tournament expecting to top eight or, God forbid, win if you don't know the matchups inside and out. I think you really do have to be prepared.
Just because you know what the answer might be doesn't mean you don't want to hear it. So, Matt, I'm going to give you the floor. Brian says Modern is healthy. Please try and contain yourself to a reasonable amount of time.
You know, Modern's healthy for a small tournament. I've said that before. But I think having such a wide open, no glue that holds the format together style, you know, with no force of will style deck or card, I don't think it's a good high level competitive format. I mean, I really don't. Have I done it a few times where I take a fun deck, you know, like Jace, and discard a Grave Titan to flip my Jace and then cast some, you know, Mystic Snake people? Yeah, I do. I've done that a couple times. Would I go to a large tournament and play it? No, because I just don't think that it's realistic for you to prepare your sideboard for every single matchup. You know, I would say in the small tournaments, like I said, the small and regional stuff, yeah, it's healthy and it's a lot of fun for a lot of players because you can take whatever you have and go and play it at a semi-competitive level as long as you're 100% familiar with it. But I think we're missing one really, really important result of this tournament, though, Sean. Why don't you bring up 26th place blue-white control and look what's in that deck?
You're going to have to do that for me as I record here in Command Central.
I know that deck. What are you talking about? What are you thinking is terrible about that deck?
Oh, I'm not saying it's terrible. I'm saying they stole Sean's tech.
Oh, somebody's Shadow of Doubting people.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they Shadow of Doubted you.
There's Shadow of Doubts in that deck.
Hey, it's the Modern legal stifle.
It is. It's something else.
this is why Modern's a great format. You can run Shadow of Doubt.
Any format where you can run Shadow of Doubt's a great format.
2-1, Hurley, you lose.
After playing it a few times, I've come around to the format a little bit, but I still think it's a terrible competitive format. I don't think it deserves a Pro Tour. I think the occasional GP is good, and that's where it needs to stop.
Keep your eyes on this space on MTGCast for Matt's new unaffiliated podcast, One Troll in a Brew. And I'm sure it's going to be coming out soon. Other news coming up this weekend. This is the limited weekend for Amonkhet GPs in Bologna, Beijing, and Richmond. It's all going to be Amonkhet Limited. That's going to be sealed with draft if you're able to make it that far. Should be interesting to see the changes to Frank Karsten's Gotta Have It list if you're going to be an Amonkhet drafter. He does this for each set, and the list is up on Channel Fireball. Frank Karsten's pick order list for Amonkhet draft. This is something that's always interesting when it comes out. He bats about 95% on these, and it's something that I've cribbed notes from before. It'll be interesting to see how it changes after the Pro Tour coming up as well. More on that a little bit later in the show. Matt, you're a financials guy, and Wizards and Hasbro had their quarterly earnings call recently. Did you delve into that at all? All I know from it is that there were conflicting reports, according to those who cover these matters, on what Wizards told their gathered crowd and what Hasbro actually included in its report. One claimed that Magic was growing, I believe at a rate that was cited at something like 43%, which is
unbelievable. If you're going to sell somebody a bridge in Brooklyn, you might want to cite that number. But at the same time, they said that their revenue from it was declining. Now, growth and revenue don't always go hand in hand, obviously, but this is something that you've kept an eye on the cast before. Were you surprised or even intrigued by any of these numbers?
I actually listened to the entire call on one of my trips up to Indy. I also listened to a good interview of the Hasbro CEO and how WotC played into their larger plan. The conflicting information I don't really get, because if it had grown that much, then how come their revenues were down? Nobody really got that one. But the Hasbro CEO was talking about how, and this is what separates Hasbro and Mattel, they want to have like a 360 style where they want to be able to market to you with toys. They want feature movies. That was a big, big portion of it. They, you know, they said, we want to partner and start doing our own. They also said they want to be able to tie in adults and children into all of this as well. And then licensing was very, very important for them as well. They also said that they wanted to tie in more into Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering. I think that they do have some bigger plans, and the call versus what Wizard said was a bit confusing, so I'm not exactly sure what was going on there. But overall, I mean, I think Magic's doing fine. I do think they did take a hit because of kind of this last quarter with Standard being a little more stale, not selling as many cards, even though they did have a Masters set release that should have sold a bunch. And then now they're releasing a second Masters later in the year, so they're trying to go back to the old model of bringing more money from each player instead of getting new, you know, refilling that funnel as they go.
Well, love them or hate them, Hasbro does have some background with major motion pictures with the Transformers franchise. So will they use some of that experience if the Magic movie gets made? We'll have to find out. And by the way, you said crossover into more adult things. I can hear Brian typing. He's actually ordering the Liliana negligee for his lovely wife. So he'll get some crossover there, and we'll see how that licensing works out for the marketing department there at Wizards and at Hasbro. That's going to take us right up on episode 52. In the elevator. It's going to be a little bit longer ride. We might have to use the Wonkavator to go up, down, left, right, and diagonal, because we're going to be taking a tour all over the previous 49 episodes of Tryhards. Matt has picked out for 49 episodes in a row a card to give financial advice on in the elevator. And we printed off the history, for the most part, of those cards. Matt, you've made about 49 picks. 16 have turned out to be positive advice. 13 were financially neutral. And the 16 ended up being kind of, well, okay, let's call it what it was. Bad financial advice when it came to that particular piece of cardboard. Along the way, have you had a greatest hit? Have you had a greatest miss?
Some of my greatest hits were actually cards that I originally told you to sell close to release time and then pick back up later. Nahiri, the Harbinger, when she was about 35 when she was first released, I was like, sell that beast. She dropped down to about 15 earlier this year. Take that as a buy. And I do think she's going to climb back up. Some other good ones would be Leovold. I didn't follow my own advice on this one. So if there was one that I said to pick up, that would be the big win. It would be that one. Some of my big turds, Goblin Dark Dwellers, even though it wasn't financially a bad one, I called that as a buy in September at about $1.50 or so. And now they're down to like 50, 60 cents. And then the other one that I actually have, I don't know, a couple hundred copies of sitting right here on my desk is Lightning Runner. I know you guys made fun of me about that. That was when Exert was first released, and I said to pick those up, and it hasn't done crap yet. I'm fairly happy on this entire list because a lot of them I called that may be considered no's. I called, you know, when they were $1.50, a dollar. And then there's a lot of these that I still feel comfortable holding. You know, I've called sell Walking Ballista. It's only dropped about 10%. The real one that boggles my mind would be Show and Tell, because I called the buy at $20 back in August, and it's dropped to like $12, $15. Maybe the legacy demand is just not there as I thought it would be.
A retrospective of self-examination in the elevator this week for episode 50. Matt, I am going to make you defend yourself on one particular card back on June 29th of 2016, you advocated for buying Aligned Hedra Network.
That
it
would
didn't
be the other
do anything, by the way.
Here that I have a stack of, I don't know, 300 or 400 of them. And I don't have the buy price in my spreadsheet here, but I know I picked up all those for about 35 to 40 cents. I think it was like 38 and a half cents. I really thought that the format was going to be taken over by all the Eldrazi, all the big, you know, fatties and all the emerge things. So I'm like, oh, Aligned Hedra Network would be a good one. That was another good, let me tell you, those things are going to sit in my box and collect dust for the next 10 years till they're good in EDH.
Well, that may never happen. So we might be using those as autograph cards that the tryhards will autograph and hand out.
Maybe I'll give them away and be like, I hope you didn't follow my financial advice.
Matt Hurley.
Oh,
yes,
boy.
That might be the cautionary tale of In the Elevator here on Tryhards. It was fun going over that list and looking at everything Matt's done over the last year. That brings us up to episode 50's 3 Minutes to Brew, introducing our brewmaster in all the appreciable senses of the term, Brian Tibbetts. What do you got for us on episode 50?
This is kind of a little bit of a riff on our Google Hangout from this weekend. I was really, really interested in all of the guys who were talking about some of the zombie builds and the black builds that were happening this weekend. And I was just kind of sitting back and listening because a lot of this stuff had not really hit home. But one of the hallmarks of black decks has always been discard spells, guys. And I know that we have Cabal Therapy, we have Thoughtseize, we have Hymn to Turok, things of that nature. As I was thinking about this, in a standard format, we have some pretty powerful discard spells. Amon Khet has given us two new ones, Dispossess and Lay Bare the Heart. Guys, do you think either of those will go against Transgress the Mind and or Collective Brutality? And if so, do they have a home in any deck moving forward in the current standard metagame, sans Felidar Guardian? So, 3 Minutes to Brew. Do you believe that Dispossess, Lay Bare the Heart, Transgress the Mind, Collective Brutality is going to make a bigger splash in Standard? Hurley, I'm going to start with you this week.
I do actually think Lay Bare the Heart is going to make a decent splash in Standard. It depends on if the gods become very widely played. If the format really does go towards like more of a heavy mid-range, that's a great one. The Dispossess, I think we've kind of figured out the magic casting cost that needs to happen, and that cost is zero. I mean, with Surgical Extraction. I don't think Dispossess is going to see anything unless we go into a heavy, heavy artifact block. Unless the format is just overrun with Gearhawks, probably Torrential Gearhawk, Converters Gearhawks, I'm guessing. I mean, Dispossess is not a good card, really. I'm not sure what we're going to utilize if the gods become really powerful. I've seen a lot of people brewing with the gods, the red one, the green one, and this does not hit those. There's even some, if you look at the standard classic from over the weekend, there's even some of the blue gods in these blue-white control decks. I'm just a little bit confused as to where this is going to go into because the metagame has to shake out first.
John, what do you think? Any of these discard spells going to have an impact moving forward?
I don't like any of the new ones as much as I like Transgress the Mind, and it's because of the restrictions that are on them. Matt's right. It's just too much on the CMC to cast Dispossess, maybe as a one-of out of a sideboard in heavy control decks if you're looking at taking away your opponent's Heart of Kirin's in a Mardu Vehicles mirror, maybe. You have so many efficient answers to it already that is cycling down on efficiency worth the extras that you get out of the deck. My inclination is that answer is no, and it's the legendary restriction on Lay Bare the Heart that I don't like. You can't take Heart of Kirin. You can't take any of the gods. You can't take a number of things along the way. So I think they all still pale in comparison to Transgress the Mind when you're looking for a standard legal discard outlet. And let's face it, none of these provide enough tempo that you're playing them in aggressive decks usually. These are all the tools of control decks, and they can sweep away your 1 and 2 mana plays and start to take those bigger mid-game plays with Transgress the Mind with no further restrictions. So I still think Transgress reigns as the discard spell of choice in Standard.
I would agree with both of you there. Transgress, I think, is going to be the best one because if anybody is playing the god-centered build, which would seem natural in Amon Khet, Standard moving forward because of you know, just how many new things there are and just brewing cycles in general. That seems to be the best one. Lay Bare the Heart, I agree with both of you, does not look to be all that possible. I'm really interested in Dispossessed just because of the artifact clause and see if this is something that can kind of neuter some of the bigger artifact builds if they're just wanting to hold on to more of their Aether Revolt, Kaladesh-type decks. The card that I still think has so much room to grow, not that it hasn't already, is Collective Brutality, just because of its different modes. And it could be one of those cards that is going to maybe make a splash in, if nothing else, sideboards of the mono-black or white-black builds with zombies moving forward. So I'm looking for that to make a little bit of a splash later.
Let me present this thought experiment then. Dispossess, would it be playable if it said and remove from game or exile any in play ones? You know, I don't know how that templating would work, but if it said any permanents with that name or anything in the card hand or library, would you play it at 3 mana? I mean, then it would just be a straight removal spell for artifacts.
This is one of those cards that I think your target would be primarily probably a sideboard game against something like Mardu Vehicles, where you would name Heart of Kirin, or you would name something against like a blue control player naming Torrential Gear Hulk or any kind of Gear Hulk that you think is coming out, because obviously that's going to be their biggest threat. So I think it's more of a way to prevent that card from hitting the board. At three, whether or not you're going to hit a Heart of Kirin is going to be probably 50-50. It's going to be a play draw kind of thing. With Torrential Gear Hulk or one of the other Gear Hulks, it's going to be a much greater possibility that you are going to hit one of those prior to them being able to cast it. So I see Dispossess as that, as kind of neutering some of the Gear Hulk decks. But how big the Gear Hulk decks are going to be, that's a great question.
Matt, I like where you're taking this idea. If it removed versions that were already in play, I'd pay 4 for that effect. To exile the card that's already in play also from their hand, graveyard, and library. So essentially, I don't have to deal with that card at all this game if I have this card.
Right.
I'd pay, say, 2 and 2 black for an effect like that, which means Wizards would cost it at 4 and 3 black if they were going to print the card. But I think you're right. You're onto something. It would be at 3 CMC, totally overpowered if it took the versions that are in play off the battlefield at that mana cost. But a card like that maybe could see print in the future, obviously at an increased mana cost.
I never understood why they don't do something like that. I think you'd be fine at 3 if it says choose target's artifact card, and then it would exile everything from their graveyard, library, and hand.
Oh, sure. You're getting into different templating, and you're essentially creating new cards at this point.
Yeah, completely. But none of those discard spells do that, though, right? It's always like, you know, Surgical and Extirpate always are targeting a graveyard spell. Some of the others are just, you know, choose it from your hand. Yeah, we're getting into a much different thing if you're taking it out of play, library, graveyard, from exile, wherever.
And I think that's a pretty powerful effect. I would think 4 or even 5 mana would be okay on that. Like if they did a black and 4 mana. I'm kind of curious why they haven't. I mean, and there could be a card out there that I don't know about that does that effect, but I'm just curious why they haven't done something like that before.
It's interesting. Get yourself a job at R&D, and then you can create that. Better yet, don't. Because there'd just be more internal strife at Wizards if Matt was in R&D.
I would probably last a week there.
Yeah, well, you'd have to wear pants too, so that'd be a major downfall. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. I had a chance to do some reading with some time that I had to myself. Jadine Klomp-Harens put together a fantastic article, I thought, on Star City Games entitled, Where is Standard Going? It's a breakdown not only of the effect that Wizards Ultimate B&R announcement had on the format, but also what the brewing is going to look like in the short term and maybe even the midterm. So if you're somebody who's going to be faced with a standard tournament that you want to dominate at FNM, or maybe a tournament of a higher level than that coming up, check it out. I think it's well worth the read if you're going to be playing standard at a very competitive level anytime soon. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
just getting used to the new cards, getting used to some mechanics, old and new, cycling, obviously. And the -1/-1 counters I found to be quite fun to play with. Reconnecting with some of the guys I hadn't seen in quite some time, seeing some new players, and generally trying to bring goodwill to the shop environment, I would say, kind of did maybe more for me than those in the community.
Hurley, you've got another 50 episodes before we let you do another retrospective on In the Elevator. So what'd you do to get better at Magic in the short term?
I got to draft Friday night. I drafted online a couple times as well. Friday night, I actually had a really good blue-white deck. I had two of those blue-white 4-drops that give all your tokens vigilance and flying. I took second, and I lost taking first by 0.015 tiebreakers. No, I got to draft a set in paper. I drafted a couple times online, and it's a blast to draft. I mean, I'm planning on hitting this draft up as much as I possibly can, and that's what I did to get better, because texting back and forth with you guys, in my draft pod, we had, it's either 4 or 5 guys who have made multiple appearances on the Pro Tour. So I would say it might be the most stacked draft pod I've ever drafted in. We talk through all of our picks. I mean, we all kind of built in front of each other. We talked through all of our picks, why we picked something, why we didn't. And it was it was enlightening to see some of the reasons that people were doing it. And I know at least one guy, he made the comment, he's like, don't hate draft. And I'm like, well, that wasn't a hate draft. I literally had nothing in my colors in that pack. So I just drafted the most powerful card, hoping to splash it. I feel like it elevated me, even if it elevated me 0.0005% as a drafter, I feel like it did elevate me because it was very enlightening.
Very cool. Getting better at Magic. You do it like you do anything else, by riffing ideas off those more experienced or better at whatever endeavor you are in than you are at that time. We hope we've made your Magic experience at least 0.00015 or whatever ridiculous number Hurley just cited better with this episode of Try Hards. Coming up next week, the return of Pro Tour Pick'em, right here on TryHards. Oh, you brave soul. We hope you enjoyed episode 50. We'll see you next time out.